Okay, we'll kick it off. Morning, everyone. I hope everyone's had a good tech ed last day. We're almost there. I think we sandwiched between the morning tea and the afternoon lunch. If you haven't had enough for morning tea, I'll make sure we get out in time for afternoon lunch. The session is in the data and BI stream, so DAT311. I'm sure everyone's in the right room here because I heard there's a big queue on the in the room next door. They're giving out something. It's not as exciting as what you're going to see here. My name is Dheeraj Chowdhury. I have with me Refki Wahib. We're from the Department of Education and Communities in New South Wales. We work in a team under the Curriculum and Learning Innovation area, where we're working very closely with the teaching and learning areas, putting out a lot of online products and services to the teaching and learning staff. And what we're here to talk about is our journey of the data dashboard and using the Microsoft BI, of course. The project started last year, but we'll go through some of that as to what we came across. So there'll be a bit of an introduction about who we are, what was the challenge, what was put upon us by the management, how we went about addressing that challenge or the business requirement. In the first half, we'll actually quickly show you the solution itself that has been put in place. Do keep in mind that it's actually a subset of the data because we were not obviously allowed to bring a lot of the data out due to privacy concerns. There's a lot of school and teacher and student-specific data that we're dealing with here. And then we'll move on to the demo parts where we thought we'll work on four challenges, fairly technical challenges that we came across in our context that we'll go one at a time, as you can see, ranging from common user identifier, and we'll talk a bit about it, data from different sources. I'm sure you, most of you could probably relate to that. When you're working in an enterprise environment, you've got data coming from different sources and how you collect that into a BI solution. And then, of course, the complex relationships, and you know the relationships I'm talking about. And, of course, then the data reporting formats, once again, the, you know, the management wanting certain ways for the data to be presented to us. And then we'll just very quickly in the end summarize with some of the lessons we've learned, some of the highlights, and then we'll open up to questions, which will all be directed back to Microsoft. Who we are, just to put a bit of a context around the thing, New South Wales Department of Education and Communities, as it's known now, has 2,200-plus schools, and we have that little plus because it varies all the time. And they're split into 10 regions. I think this is very important just to build the context around who we are and what sort of data and what we're talking about. Each region has a challenge and has a regional director and has their own management layer who want to see their data in their context. So again, you can, if you start to paint that picture about a BI solution, we are not only having, the solution was not only to build it for the management sitting in Sydney, but also to take into account the 10 regions. And then, of course, we have a similar structure on the TAFE side, the TAFE New South Wales, again split into 10 regions across 200 colleges. 70,000 full-time staff. Can anyone match this in this room here? No, I didn't think so, because we are the largest bureaucracy in the world, actually. 3 It's to be something to be proud of that we're still carrying on. 3 million user accounts, and I kid you not, it is 3 million because some of you, how many people from Sydney or New South Wales? Okay, not that many, so I will tell you the story then. The government, I think Bob Carr announced maybe 7 years ago to, you know, issue an email and a user ID to everyone and, you know, the whole cradle to grave scenario. I'm glad it's not extending that far. But yes, every student has been given a user ID. Every teacher has been given a user ID. So if you can just imagine Some parts of that program have even been extended into Catholic and independent schools as well, hence that user count. There's a number of programs that the government runs that spans across both of them. I hope that's probably enough of the context and you can start to see. The area we work in, as I mentioned earlier, is part of the learning and the curriculum and learning innovation area. So we are dealing with the teaching and learning services. There is, of course, the Information Technology Directorate, who would work in the corporate applications and the corporate environment, dealing with student management, student registration, results, attendance, and all of that. And there's a larger program called the Enterprise Information Management Program, which we sit under in terms of this project. So we will be showing you a subset of our of our solution in that space. I hope that sort of makes sense. So what we have here is just a quick snapshot of the type of data we're dealing with. And I'll very quickly go through it. We're dealing with data coming from the digital engagement of our learners and teachers. So as you can imagine, the last few years have been where a lot of effort has been put into putting content and creating online activities for students to interact online. And again, the teachers have been... So we have a lot of data that is being collected through this online applications and portals. So the students and teachers have the ability to create content online using some of the tools, and some of those actually have been built on the Office platform. They then have the ability to share that content, so they can put it into repositories and share it widely amongst the 2,200 schools and the 1.2 million students and teachers. And that, again, you know, just since we are in a Microsoft conference, is built on a Microsoft platform, SQL Server 2008 with the ASP.NET front end. And then, of course, we have the ability then again to connect, where we have a portal where the users can log on and get the data. And finally, we have, again, a layer of Web 2.0 social technologies built on top, where the users have the ability to interact with that data and to rate it or tag it and things like that. And again, we won't go into too much detail. But the building of the context here is that we get a lot of engagement, behavioral usage, a lot of that data. And the backdrop of that, of course, is the school information, the user information, the regional information. So the management is very keen to get that breakdown, and they passed a decree last year saying if you're going to come to us and ask for any new projects or any discussion, you better be bringing some data. I trust what you're saying, but you better back it up with some data. And that could relate to us wanting to extend a program that is running online, establish an online game in teaching students a history or geography, and we do that. So the aim was that the management said, that's all well and good, but can you back it up with some data about how it has been successful or accepted on the ground? And that's what led us to then start to think about and bring together our solution. Very quickly, as I mentioned earlier, the challenges were highlighted, that we have a very diverse environment. We've got Active Directory at the core of all our user identification, but in addition to that, we have an Oracle IDM for single sign-on. So you can imagine the information and user attributes are already split up. I'm presuming a lot of you could probably relate to that in your organization. Then we have a multitude of application databases, so ranging from MySQL to, again, a number of them I mentioned are in SQL Server, Oracle, and so on and so forth. And then some of the usage data, we are using Google Analytics, since most of our products are online, so a lot of the data is being captured in Google Analytics, along with, of course, the server logs, and so on and so forth. So you can see the amount of data that we had to deal with. The challenge that the business put upon us was saying, okay, we want one point of access for all performance data. I don't want to have to go around and pick up reports and somebody brings me in one format, the other one brings me in another format. And not only that, because as I said, there's different sources for user information to begin with. that person creating the report might have used different sets of information and so on and so forth. So you can sort of see the momentum and the inertia gathering behind a consolidated BI solution. Of course, as you can imagine, I think I've been to a number of sessions already where we've been reminded about how the management can come in and ask and say, why can't I click on this on my iPad or on my phone? Well, again, the visual representation of data was critical. The ability to drill down, I think they all go away and see it in some presentation and come back and pretty much bother us. I hope this is not being recorded. And then, of course, I think the ultimate challenge for us was to ensure that the business was able to drive this. And I'm going to try and be a bit of a guinea pig today and try and show you how we've enabled that in the system using Excel, moving into Excel services and Power Pivot later on. And then, of course, the ability to analyze data by the user itself. Once the challenge was, of course, defined, we moved on. We did a situational analysis. We looked at the market, the various tools. Mind you, there is a tool already in the department that was being used for a number of years. It is IBM Cognos. I believe IBM bought Cognos a couple of years ago, which is used extensively in the data warehouse. However, it was starting to show its age. Some of you probably are familiar with this. You know, it's not as user-friendly or as a GUI and interface as we can get from some of the more recent tools now. And we looked at, of course, the magic quadrant from Gartner and ended up picking, the department ended up picking Microsoft BI Stack for the entire solution in the department, and we were one of the first ones to run with it. As you can see, we followed a fairly standard process of defining the data sources, going through the ETL process, getting the data into a staging environment, building the cubes, and then there's multiple outputs, which you'll see some of them today as we go through the session and some of the demos. Look, at this point, I will jump in because I know you guys are all itching to see this. Again, as I said, the data is just a snapshot of for the demo, as there is some sensitive data in the system. Just before I log on, the users have the ability to come to the dashboard, which is on SharePoint 2010, where they can connect to some of the services they're using. And it's actually a neat little Silverlight app that we built. So you can see I talked about create. So if they were using a particular tool to create content, they could very quickly jump into it and see what the capability is and then go from there. Of course, then there is aspects in the connect and the share and the connect space as well. But of course, this session we're not going to waste any time doing any of that. But if people are interested, I'm more than happy to talk about it afterwards. In the dashboard, of course, is all the data that those applications are connecting then displayed for the users. And you can see there's a view here where you can see the LRR user breakdown. So, and you can start to see some of the roles coming through and the organization types, the total downloads of resources, as I mentioned. LearnCast is the equivalent of YouTube for the department. So we have an internal YouTube type channel where a lot of the video content relating to teaching and learning is posted. And that's where you can sort of start to see the access to some of the resources and how many people are viewing videos. We've seen an exponential increase in students wanting to access video content. So if there was a content just in a text or video, they'll go for video. But those are some of the insights after we've built the dashboard. So let's go into one of the dashboards here, which is the repository, since it gathers a majority of the data. One of the first things we did in this was, of course, to have the global variable. So, of course, every region, not only region, but every sector is only interested in their data. So you can, across the dashboards, or across the whole dashboard, you can split all the data by the global variables of either schools or TAFE. So that was the first cut we made into the thing. And of course, then every set of data, again, has the ability to be interrogated on a time range. And again, you can sort of see how it updates the whole dashboard based on the time scale you pick. And then the last of the global variables is the region, because that is, as I mentioned earlier, is one of the most critical factors in how it's consumed by the end user. And of course, you can select multiple here, and I'll just apply these, and then it will update. In some cases, looks like that one's not come through for some reason, but I think you get the idea about how it is used by the end users. And now I'll just quickly jump across to the other interface, which is the Excel interface that is used by the end users. And again, that is to empower the end users to create their own reporting to satisfy the management's requirements, so they're not always just coming to the programming team or the BI team to build those reports. So just over here, I'm sure you would have attended Grant session yesterday, Grant Paisley, and he's shown you extensively about what is possible. We actually did get some very useful tips from Grant while we were working on this project, so he was very kind to help us out, and he's working closely with the department on a number of things. In our case, of course, as you can see, there's the use of the slicers where you can get the data. Again, this session we're not so much talking about the features, but you get the idea about what is possible. But what I'm going to do here is very quickly show you what we were able to do in terms of enabling the business user to quickly create their own report. Won't go through the lot, so I won't take too much time, but I think it's useful to just have a quick look. And so I've just picked up the connection to the data source, and the data source is from the analysis service. I'll just very quickly paste that there. I'll connect to the server. You can see there's a number of cubes available for me to access. In this case, look, I'll just go to the LRR dev. In the LRR dev, there's a number of cubes, and then there's one with the perspective. Again, in our, some of you would be aware of the whole perspective thing, where you can control the amount and the type of data that comes through, which we can now connect to. Okay, finish this. Accept that. Yes, put the pivot in there. So there you go. It's fairly quickly I've been able to connect to the data source. I think there's, for an average business user, this is the first time they've been able to do in the department. If they'd had to get any type of data in the past, they'd have to wait maybe a month because the data source will not be available easily through either a format or through a channel like this. And once again, a lot of the finance and other local teams, I'm not talking finance centrally, local teams are very familiar with Excel, but they have no rights or access to the data, whereas now we can, especially with the using of perspectives, we can expose some data that is relevant to them fairly quickly. So look, just a quick example, we'll look at the download count of, let's say, the resources, and then we'll just split it up by, since we've been talking about the time, I'll just pick up year here. Oops, hang on, I'll just drag the year into rows. Anyway, look, we'll just, I think that gives you a little idea of what is possible fairly easily based on this. And of course, the users can then create a chart very quickly. So if they wanted to just create a chart, bang, there's a chart. And if they wanted to go further, they can even create the slices and all that. But look, I won't go through the lot. But the point of this is how easy it has been for our users, and what the business has gained from it has been phenomenal. We'll move on. I think that gives you a little snapshot of where we've come to and the solution that has been put in place. for the department. Again, we had some backup slides just in case the demo didn't work. But it's, I think it's worked. So we'll move on to the challenges, and we'll look at some of the key challenges and some of the technical aspects of what we went through in setting it up. So the first one, as I mentioned, was the challenge around user information. So there's the Active Directory, and then there's the IDM. There's about 1.3 million accounts in one, and there is about 2 million dormant, and then there is, of course, the user information. The challenges, of course, is that the user information and the user attributes in each of the spaces is quite varied. They've got regional information. They've got roles here. So there was a big challenge to bring that together. We had a few options. We could go to the IDM team and get them to give us the data and clean it up. I won't tell you what happened. We could hook up with the APIs, which is kind of what we did, but it was sort of a custom solution because the data is not sort of clean. You know, it has to be transformed into something that we can use to apply to our usage patterns then. So there were a few options there. A quick snapshot of this is the login for the IDM, the Oracle IDM, and this is the a view of the Active Directory with some of the user profiles sort of coming through, or user attributes coming through there, different sets of data, different things. But look, we'll go through now and just show you, and Refki will show us a bit of a dive into what that meant and how we got the data out of those two sources and how we merged the data to get a clean set that would make sense in the reporting. So over to you, Refki.
All right. Thank you, Diraj. What happened is we have a lot of data in Active Directory. We have a lot of data in Oracle IDM. But unfortunately, we couldn't access this Oracle IDM. So we need to have a solution to retrieve all this data and bump it to our business intelligence solution. First step that we did, we said, all right, we can access Active Directory. And we know there is more than 60,000 or 70,000 users in Active Directory. We can bulk upload all of this data. So first thing that I will show you, the table or the data that we need to capture. We said we have in Active Directory, there is a lot of attributes, there is a lot of roles. We are not interested in all of that. And there is a lot of IDM information. We're still not interested. All what we're interested is just this information. I want to know what is the region that the user belongs to. I want to know what is the organization name, like school or TAFE or curriculum or whatever. And I want to know something about the user ID or the portal ID, because that is what we linked as a dimension, as we'll see in SSCS. So that is the data that we need to construct. So first step, we came to Active Directory. What we did, we create a link to Active Directory through SQL Server. So here, we create a linked server, and then with the wizard, new link server, and we choose Microsoft Directory Service. And then we put the information I will give you, that is a DSI, Active Directory Service Interface, and that is the property that we supply. That is just a name. A DSI is something very common. You can put anything. And that is the product name. That is the data source. And the most important thing is the security. That is, we use BMED using the security context. That is the remote login. And that is the password. That is what we have been provided. After we create this link with the wizard, we generate the code. And that is the code that you need to run it on the server. So I don't want all of these things. First part of the code, that is add link server. That is what you need. That is the information to create the link server. And the second part of the code, that is what you need for a security. So you can generate this code and run it on the server. What I will show you now, it's a live data from Active Directory. I will query. So I have here some code. The beauty of this solution that when you query the Active Directory exactly like you are querying the SQL database. Open query syntax, that is when you connect, when you try to access any linked server, and that is the linked server name, that is LDAP query, lightweight directory access protocol, that is the host in the query, and one of the key things that you need, the DC, domain controller, that is Western Sydney, DET, WIN, and that is the organization unit, that is CLIC stuff, organization unit stuff, that is the organization unit. After that, that's the criteria. We're interested in all object categories that equal person and object class equal user. Then we put the list of attributes that we need to retrieve. And that's why we can select them here. If you didn't mention any attribute here, you couldn't select it here. So what I did here, I did a query for most important person in the department, which is me. So here, that is all the information that I have in Active Directory. And maybe I put my manager as well. That is. So with this way, we make a bulk retrieve from all Active Directory users, and we bump the database, and we have a script. This script is a console application that became to resolve or to retrieve the other attribute.
Okay, thank you, Rifki. I think that you got an idea there about how we're getting the data from Active Directory using Link Server, and then query the different, again, Rifki showed you about the Western Sydney. There are 10 regions along with the central forest, and we're sort of applying that across and getting a lot of that data out. Gradually. So the next one we're going to jump into is the Oracle IDM as to how we now interrogate the portal to get other half of the information out and then pull it all together in one space within the staging server of the BI.
Right. Thank you, Diraj. The ABI that we have for Oracle, it's a SOAP web service. What is the problem with this SOAP web service? That you couldn't retrieve a list of users. We have another problem that you need to know what is the role of the user. If the user is teacher, there is some method to invoke. If the user is a staff member, there is other method. So we need a logic. So with this way, we need to create a custom solution. This solution retrieves this data from the SOAP. This service, that is a secure service that we have, you couldn't access unless you are inside the department. And here, that is the whistle of the service. And I just...
So we've just VPN'd into the department to actually do this part. So don't tell that we're actually showing you some of this.
So we can very quickly try to retrieve some data from the web service itself through the helper page. Here, there is a method called get staff member detail. So I put my name, Refki.Wahib, and invoke. Here, the data in IDM is so different from Active Directory. For example, in Active Directory, I have more than 200 roles, one of roles related to permission in folders, all of these things. But here, you see that this role is school non-teacher. That's it. That is what we want. That is exactly when Diraj was talking about the performance point. We need to drill down by the role. We need to know how many activities per teacher, per student, per teacher from TAFE. That is the role that what I need. So here, that is the information that we got from IDM, and we populated in the database.
Okay. Look, I thought we'll just tie that one up back by going to our dashboard and just showing you what we just saw there. So let's bring this one up here in a new window. As you can see, this is a user role breakdown. So you saw in the demo that Rifki did, that you could pull out the school teacher or the non-school teacher, which goes into the other, because a lot of the times the management is primarily concerned about interaction from the school teachers or students, not so much about corporate staff. And there's not many of us, but I know this is showing a lot of us there, but it's not. I think it was just this data set that we could get out is probably showing you that. And of course, then you could drill down. I'll pick on the slither of information there. You can start to see the breakdown by region. Again, in this case, it seems like we've got that one region. But I think that's been the aim, to ensure that that roles are captured accurately, so the data then that is being presented back to the regions is accurate. Okay, we're moving on to the next challenge, Refki.
All right.
Okay, so let's just flick back here. In the first demo, of course, again, we had these slides as backup just in case we couldn't do some of the stuff. Refki showed you the connections with the Oracle IDM SOAP services, and before that with the AD Link services. And of course, we showed you some of that stuff. I think the console app, which we didn't show, is where we are then consuming those two services and getting the data to load into the staging. So, do you want to show that, Refki?
No, that's fine. But all right, I can show that very quick. The console app, because there is. Okay. The concept of console app is just has the incremental updates. That's all. So the idea of the console app that we retrieve the new user that come for each application. So here, for example, even without running the application, here I have a stored procedure. It's called STB, get unique users, for first application, for second application, for third application. And each stored procedure, the programmer will implement this method to retrieve the distinct user in this application. Then we are comparing with the cached user that we already retrieved all the information, and then we try to resolve this in runtime. We get this information, we hit the IDM web service, we hit the Active Directory entries and get the data and save it there. So it means that every time we run this console application, we just retrieve the incremental update. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you. So in summary, I think we've summarized this now a couple of times, that there was no access to the live information. We did have to go through that process, but that was fine because we could then only we could ensure that we were only extracting and dealing with the data that we needed. So it was a good little exercise. Of course, it improved the processing time because we were able to cache that data, and then we were only harvesting deltas, as Refki mentioned in the last set there, where we didn't have to go back and get the data at all times or query the whole thing. As I touched upon, there were some side effects, but I won't talk about that here. Okay, the challenge two, again, sort of similar, but one of the challenges was data coming from different sources, different application databases, some sitting internal to the network, and there are some applications that we have that sit external to the network, and of course the different formats. So we'll talk about what those challenges were. Of course, the options of connecting with that data sources through various technologies, such as the options through Link Server or the connections directly into the databases, and then also the challenge around accessing SharePoint lists. I know we didn't touch upon that before, but there are some applications which are sitting in SharePoint, and there's a requirement that we had to ensure that that data can be brought into the BI environment for reporting as well. And we'll talk about a few options. One particularly not quite the enterprise option that one would prefer, which is through the MS Access. But we'll just talk about why we used it and how it's panned out for us. Of course, the options we chose was to use a Link Server to extract the data. That has been, I think, our best friend. And then with the SharePoint one, as I said, we did choose Access, but we'll talk a little bit about that as to why and how it has sort of served the purpose for us. Okay, over to you, Refki.
Thank you, Diraj. As Diraj said, that our challenge that we have multiple databases with database format, with different locations. So to overcome this challenge, one of the interesting things that we're thinking is just to create a linked server. Once you create a linked server, it became very easy to do your ETL. It's very easy to query all the data from Oracle, from MySQL, for anything like Active Directory, as I show you, just from SQL command, and you can use the normal APIs that you are using for database. So it was a very nice solution. the steps that we did for Oracle. Number one, we installed the Oracle client runtime. After we installed the Oracle runtime, Oracle client runtime, it installed all the components that you need, all EDB driver for Oracle. It will install the ODBC. And will install the Oracle Home. It's a folder, and that is the key for connecting to Oracle. So here, after we install the Oracle, we install it twice, and that's why you have two here. So after we install Oracle, we have this tool. This tool, if you need to create the Oracle service manually through a wizard. So that is the service name that we have, one for school, one for TAFE, and that is the Oracle database that hosted outside. But actually, we didn't create the Oracle service from this wizard. All what we did, the Oracle admin gave us a file, the TNS file name, and he told us just to drop it in Oracle Home directory. So that's Oracle Home, and that is network, and that is the admin, and that is the file that we need. So he gave us this file, has all the information that you need.
So we did have some friends on the inside.
We have all the information that you need to connect to Oracle. Of course, especially the credentials, the username and password. That is what we'll supply in Linked Server. And then in Linked Server, we create Linked Server using all Oracle OLB, Oracle provider to OLEDB, and that is the one. So I can show you. So that is the information that you need. All what you need here for data source is service name, and you can put anything here. And the security, that is the real username and password that we have to connect Oracle. However, this tool is so important just because it has a test. You can test with the real credentials that you have. Because when we staffed up, we didn't know where is the problem. So when we begin to use this wizard and we test, we understood that everything right, all what we need to do to put the right information here. One of the nice things that you can browse the schema. So that is the default schema, and that is you have all the data. That's an Oracle. And I can query now Oracle. I will show you very quick new query. So here I am query all the school information from Oracle. Exactly like I'm doing in SQL. Sometimes we are wrapping this SQL statement with views, so we're creating views with the same name, with the same table name in the Oracle, so every programmer can use this view straight away. So that is how we consume the data from Oracle.
Okay, thank you, Refki. Look, I thought I will tie that back now to the interface that we have here. And let's look at this one here. This is the learning activity wizards. Again, very heavily used by school teachers in this case to create digital interactives, learning activities for the students. So again, the management was very keen to have that sort of upfront to see how that is progressing and are we still doing paper-based activities or are we truly moving online? So let's just bring that up to join those dots there. You have the breakdown of the contributors creating those activities. You see the school teachers. I can, of course, click on it, and I can see it by the region. So all the information, again, is critical to be broken down by region. I'll just randomly click on one of these here, and you can start to see the schools. There is actually the ability where we can actually then click on a particular school and start to see teachers and students, but that's all secure data. But we do have that sort of breakdown available to us. Okay, we'll switch back to Refki, who will just talk about now connecting to the other data sources, SharePoint and MySQL, where we are getting some of there's a bookmark application which happens to be in MySQL as to how we went about doing that.
I will go through this one very quick because it was similar. With MySQL, all what we did is just we download the OWC for MySQL. And we just configure this one and registered from Linked Server as OWC. So we get this one, which is Kerlis Live. And again, like all the Linked Server, you can very easily create the script that you can write on the server. Just you need these two lines, one to add the server, Linked Server, the second one for security. So here, for instance, these bookmark applications, I retrieve all the bookmarks, and I will say the address like ping. So if I query this one, there is a lot of bookmark for ping here. So as you see here, I am just query the MySQL exact like I am query the SQL server. There is no different. And then we are creating some views to wrap this SQL statement. Maybe something little bit missing, I will cover very quick. Sometimes you need to tick this one. So in the provider, for example, if I am using Active Directory interface provider, so in this case, maybe you need to support like operation to make tick here, and there is some options here to make the query is working. But other than that, everything works fine.
Did you want to show the SharePoint?
Yes.
Yep. Thank you.
SharePoint has little story, and it's very important to know the story to know why we did this solution. The story is when we begin with the project, we have some limitation. One of the limitation, we don't have access to SSIS. That is big limitation. Second limitation, the instance of SSIS, it was a standard, not enterprise. But that is not affecting this one. So in this time, we are thinking how we can quickly upload all the SharePoint list to the database. So what we did, something very quick, we said, all right, it will be an interim solution. We'll do it until we do it with the right way. What we did here, we get Microsoft Access, and from external data, more, we choose SharePoint list, and then we choose the SharePoint, which is TM, which is Time Tracker, that is the website, and we are choosing link to be live data, not imported to be cached. No, I want link data, which is live data, and then next, then we choose all the list that what we have. After that, you get this linked table. What you will see here is very, very beautiful solution. Why? Because the list that you see here, it's exactly what you see in SharePoint. If you connect to the SharePoint through the database, to construct the same field, sometimes you need up to 4 or 5 joins to get this data. But here, just this linked table, it will give you exactly what you see in SharePoint. Second step, I want to move all this linked table to SQL Server. So what we did here, we make upsizing for the linked table that we have. Maybe I already open it. All right. So here, when you do upsizing, all what you need, create a new database, I will say next. All what it needs is just the SQL instance, and if you have trusted connection, bang all your tables now in SQL Server. And then it will give you an offer, tell you, do you like to create a linked table with the table that already in SQL Server? If you said yes, we'll end up with something like this. So I just choose one table. So now I have two sets of linked table. First set coming from SharePoint, second set, which is the target in SQL Server. Synchronization, it will be very easy. All what we need to do is to have just a SQL statement. Now it will run. This SQL statement, we are selecting all the data in SharePoint that is not in SQL database. Or actually, it means we need the new data. It doesn't give us anything because all the data is up to date there. So maybe if I make design, it will show you. I don't want this one, I want SQL view. Here, it will select all the data from SharePoint list where the project number not in. So in this case, we always query all the data that is in SharePoint but not in the database. After that, we have another SQL statement, update source. It will insert this new data in the source. This solution will take about half an hour for us with all these steps. So the data now is in SQL Server. The data is up to date. We have async. All what we need to do is just run like a schedule task to run this one every night to be up to date with SQL Server.
Yes. Okay, thank you, Refki. Look, I just wanted to draw that back to the BI dashboard, but I'll do that one for the MySQL one where we were talking about the bookmark, how we drew those bookmarks out. As you can see here, this is a public website, curls.edu.au, where teachers and students are encouraged to share teaching and learning resources, very similar to Delicious. But the focus here is very much around teaching and learning resources, and it's been a huge hit out there. There's over 20,000 links to resources, so I'm sure many of you would have kids going to schools. It's worth checking this one out. But let's have a look at what we were able to do when we brought that data from MySQL and the data from the Oracle IDM and AD. Let's bring this up here. This is just a snapshot of the data talking about contribution of the URLs. And what I wanted to show here particularly was the decomposition tree that we can do. So I've just clicked on September, the number of accumulated hits on those links in that month. Takes a little while. Hopefully it will come up. I think, come on. You can talk amongst yourselves if you want for a bit. I won't mind that. I think it's worth having a look because it is quite powerful what we are able to do through this, where you can, again, in this case, I will actually go down to the teacher level to show you because, again, the fact that I can go down to teacher level in this application is because it is public information. You can actually go to the website and do the same. So look, let's just click on 1st of September here. And let's just break it down by region. So I'll first go by region. Again, as I said, all of our data, that was one of the key things that it has to be, it has to have the ability to be broken down by region. I think there's something funny with the data set that's come back, but at least hopefully we can show you the capability of being able to drill down further. Look, I won't bother with that. My apologies for this. We'll come back to later. Let's go back to the presentation. If people are interested, we can show this at the end of it, or if it comes up, I'll sort of pop it back on screen. Okay, these were, as I said, we had some backups for the screens. As Refki showed you how we made the connections with Oracle and then worked our way through SQL link through link services and then the access to connect to the SharePoint lists. Let's move on very quickly now to challenge number three, which was I think we would all struggle with if we had many, many relationships. There was a particular case in our project as well where we had a scenario where we have the learning resource repository which holds reference to all the learning resources, but the challenge was that a learning resource then has multiple many-to-many relationships, and that proved a bit of a challenging part for us where a learning resource is hooked up to multiple key learning areas, KLAs. It's hooked up to multiple education levels, which is stages 1, 2, 3, or year 1 to, you know, kindy to year 12. So there were many-to-many relationships, and of course, the ask from the management was that, oh, we want to be able to drill down, and we want to be able to see all KLAs and get a split across which stages are using which resources, and I'm sure you can relate to that. Without going into the application itself, you can sort of see this is the repository environment that I'm just referring to, where a teacher has the ability to come in and add a depositor resource, and then they have the project manager and whatnot. They can publish to multiple sources, so it is a single point publishing to multiple sources, and then start to select multiple education levels that that resource may apply to, and then the other screens then go into the schools tab, then goes into, okay, you've picked stage one, what is the syllabus it relates to, and what is the key learning areas that it relates to, which created the challenge for us. The demo will take us through what we did to overcome that and how we designed the cube and the related facts and dimensions to be able to give the end user the capability to drill down by that. So over to you, Refki.
Right. Thank you, Diraj. We have some applications. The database was so easy. So all what we are doing in SSAS, we have just a star schema and all the relationships between the fact and dimension, it was just regular relationship. So for instance, that is a learning resource table. And this dimension, which is status or resource type, that's very straightforward relationship. That is regular relationship. There is no problem with that. But the problem is when I have the learning resource and I want this learning resource to be breakdown by different information, as Diraj mentioned, like KLA or educational level or sort of things, that is it was a little bit a challenge for us. For instance, the relation between this table, which is learning resource table, any queue for name query, but just for some calculated column, but that is the table of learning resource table, and that is the education level. The relation between them is many to many. So what I need is to break down, to slice this fact information and fact measures by the education level. We had few options. One of the options, for example, we can create one big name query and make join between this table and this the many-to-many relation. If we did that, we'll end up with just one primary key in this dimension, and we have a foreign key here. If we did that, it will work. So I can use just a regular relationship, and it worked fine. But the problem that the cube itself has another many-to-many relationship and another many-to-many relationship. So if I click to dimension usage, you found there is so many information here for dimension usage. So what's happening is we said, all right, let us try to use the many-to-many relationship that is already provided with SSAS. So in this case, I will show you just, so that is a learning resource, or that is a download, and that is the education level, and that is many-to-many. So the challenge here, or how we overcome challenge, it was here. That is, we try to understood this, and it said here, you have, that is a fact, and that is the indirect dimension that I need to break down. So all what I need is intermediate fact table and intermediate dimension. If I created this intermediate fact and dimension, I can link it back. Some data warehouse, they name it a bridge table, but the same concept. So that is what, and that's why we make it yellow. Yellow, it means that you have some measure, or it became fact table. Blue, it means a dimension table. So what we did here, we make this many-to-many relationship as a fact table. Once we make it fact table, in this case, we can use this information, which is intermediate resource education level. So I very quick, I will browse for the cube to see the result. So that is, for instance, all measure in the cube. So that is KLA. This one is many-to-many relationship. And if I choose publish to, is many-to-many relationship. And I can break down exactly like the like user region, which is a regular relationship. So it makes the life easy. But however, we have a problem now. The problem here is that we introduced a lot of fake or something that we don't want to be appear in the user interface. I don't want the user to see intermediate resource or at all. So what we did is just with the property, we hide this one. We make visible equal false. If you hide all the measures in all intermediate facts, none of them will be appear here. So when I make browse, you will not see any intermediate measures here. So the idea here that with the many-to-many, we use the many-to-many features that supported by SSAS. But to do that, you need to create an intermediate table, and you need to link it back. And then you need to hide this one just to hide these measures from the user interface.
I hope you got all that one. Because I will actually put up my hand, because I when I went through this with the Rifki, I struggled a bit as well. I think I was hitting the upper ceilings of my technical capability there. But the aim, of course, was, as I mentioned, for the end user, or for, in this case, the business users, to be able to have that capability to be able to slice and dice the data in multiple ways. Again, once it was in the cube and the appropriate facts and dimensions were identified and defined, they could quite easily work through either the Excel, particularly in this case, the Excel sheets, to be able to drag and drop particular key learning areas. So in this, for us, it was very important that there were different teaching areas who were only wanting to look at the data and slice it by their particular area of teaching or learning. Again, as I mentioned, we did have a backup there, but I won't go through all that here. Rifki went through some of this. We move on to the last challenge now, which is the data reporting. So again, as I said, one of the things was that we are dealing with a lot of usage and engagement of behavioral data coming from web usage, was to accumulate that data. Everyone, we want to be able to get the data by the year, by the month, by the week, by the quarter, and then to, of course, to aggregate it across over a time range, and so on and so forth. So we, I think that's just a quick view of what I'm talking about, that they wanted to be able to drill down by the month and by even, in some cases, down to the day. The options available were to create accumulated values over time using aggregations and queries within the relational database, or to use, of course, MDX. And in our case, we did end up using MDX, and which is something that Rifki will show us in the demo now. So over to you, Rifki.
Right. Thank you, Diraj. Here, that is the challenge that we have. I have, for example, I have download count, and that is the accumulated downloads. As you see here, that is every time you calculate the accumulated download, what it does, it adds the download count plus the previous accumulated download. That is how we can create all this total or all this accumulated. And here, it's working with any level. So if you try to break down, I shouldn't do that third time. So even if I try to do like this, even per each day, it will work. So to make this accumulation happen with all this level and hierarchy, it's a little bit tricky. Tricky because we didn't use the MDX before. Before this problem, we tried to resolve a lot of problem with SQL statement itself. So if we have a problem like this, we can get a year and create some computed field for year and months and try to group by and make these calculations. But it will not work very well if your intention to be working in SSAS. At the same time, when we try to use the MDX, MDX was so easy, or at least it's just one line of code. If I can show you here, maybe I will show this script mode. That is the line of code that we need. All the other is just formatting, but that is what we need. All what we are doing here, that is the download count from the measures. And we are adding the value from the dimension hierarchy with previous members. So it will accumulate every time we drill down, every time we drill down by time, and that is a previous member, it will add here. I can show you a little bit about MDX, how we can construct it. So that is the database, and that is so that is a cube, and that is a slicer. That is not a filter like SQL statement. It's just a slicer. I want to which measure that I need. So in this case, I say, for example, I want download count. So it will give you everything. So maybe I'll say select. And I will choose from the time. I can choose something like year. So I can just validate how previous member working here. So I will choose a real values. So maybe 2008. And so here it give me 2008, 2010. So if I put previous member here, become here 2009. So previous member, it just gets the data from the last member that you are query. This and it means a key, because each attribute has a value and key. And there is something interesting that helped us a lot. I'm not sure if I should say it or not. There is open source. It's very nice. It's called the MDX Studio. The problem with that is just in beta, but is very, very good. It has a lot of intelligence. So you forgot your cube, your dimension. When you are working, you see all the dimensions, the cubes, the measures. You can do a lot of sort of things. It can parse some data. Sometimes it hangs, yes, because it's beta. But that is some of this tool.
Excellent.
So, all right. There is other challenge about the formatting, which is the time. What's happening with the time? We have a tricky problem with the time. I have multiple databases, and I have a problem with the time range. Some databases, it has data in year 2000, for instance. But other database, it begins with 2008. So I want to create only one time dimension, time dimension, and they affect all the databases. So to do that, maybe I need a script to change the range of this time dimension, or to do something as we did here. What we did is we hide it all the time that we don't need. So if I have a calculation like this, for instance, I am saying if the data is 2012, that is, for example, that is future data. I want my cubes be ready even up to 2015. There's no problem with that. But I don't want to show it now. That is this data. So what I am doing, I just try to hide all the information from 2012, 2013, 2014. So that is one of the expression. We use IF, and we try to eliminate any year value within these values. Maybe I can show you this very quickly. Here you see the data that's available up to 2015. But if you drag the year, if you drag just the year attribute like this, it will stop in 2011. Why? Because with MDX expression, we filter out any other year. So that is one of the ways that we are using MDX expression, just to filter as non-relevant data or something, and keep just one dimension for one time dimension available for all databases.
Thank you, Refki. That does bring us to the end of the demos. Again, I'll very quickly just go through those and just jump across to the summary of that. Of course, we did find the use of the MDX tool to be very powerful in querying multidimensional cubes, and then to be able to create accumulated figures and aggregate the data sets. And as Refki mentioned and highlighted, it was fairly easy to use. So I'm sure if you're not already giving it a go, you should. Towards the end now, where we probably wanted to just stress upon some of the lessons we learned. The ETL process, defined very early on in the process, really helped us, made us think about what data sets we wanted, how we were going to clean them up, what was the ultimate endpoint for those. The use of linked servers, as you saw throughout, we linking to different data sources or to various applications, we use the linked server. We did have a constraint about not having access to SSIS. We, however, have been doing a lot of work using that now, and of course, taking into consideration the slowly changing dimensions, in our case, the user profile sort of shifting very often, where teachers move on or they come from a different school or they, you know, the whole idea around that has been quite a challenging one. We showed the link dimensions and the use of that and of course the use of SAS Enterprise version to then allow us to do perspectives and then tailor the output for the end user. And of course what this little step we took with the user was really force them to think in those sort of ways of what do you want and how do you want to break it down so we can start to sort of picture it and give them capability which is over and above what they're just putting it on paper. But it does force them to think a little bit about what is it that they're wanting out of this whole solution. And then, of course, the last one, a little tip, which we did pick up along the way, is that if you have friendly attribute names, they then go all the way through to Excel and then also into the performance point environment. It was easy to use, very user-friendly. We've had minimal training for the end user in this. At this point, look, as I mentioned, I'll come back to this little decomposition tree. I just let it run at the back there. So you can see it's fairly self-explanatory there, where you can break it down by region, and then I've been able to break it down by school, and then, of course, by the teacher as well. So these are accumulated hits on that particular teaching and learning website that we were talking about. So that is the power of data, of course, where we can start to even use this to tailor professional development and types of professional development that goes out to teachers. And we met the core requirement, which was greater control back to the business user, and that platform provided that opportunity where the end user could control and create their own reports and, of course, access them through a user-friendly interface if they didn't want to create their own. That's where we'll stop. If there are any questions, we'll be... Yep. Okay, so the question was, we have a very diverse set of data and of course, in the geographic sense as well. How do we explain the various dimensions and the thing? Some of the stuff that we have used in this project, such as key learning areas or education levels and things like that, the end user is very familiar with those. What they're not familiar with it is things like accumulated hits, and accumulated URLs or accumulated things. We do run that as the minimal training that we've had to do. So we have actually had some user guides and some champions, so to speak, on the ground where we interact with the coordinators to get that message out. And then again, different. In our case, a lot of the data at this stage is being accessed by regional offices. So the regional offices is the 10 offices that we have to deal with, and that has been fairly manageable through one-to-one discussions.
Can I add something? I just want to add something. What's happening is sometimes when you have a very big cube, it's good to create perspectives. So you still have the cube, but you are selecting which dimension and which measure that you are show. So if some users, they are familiar with or that is interested in a part of the cube, not everything, you just create a perspective for him. So this one is helping very well. With each database, about 4 or 5 cubes, and we have about 15 databases.
What was the restriction on your not having SSIS being available to you again for the SQL Server version?
So the question was what the restrictions around SSIS. We at the in the start of the project, we only had the standard edition, and didn't have access to the enterprise edition for reasons unknown. At that point, I'm sure some licensing and cost-related stuff, but that has been sorted out, and we've eventually gotten access to that. So I think mostly to do with licensing.
Yes, I just want to have a comment here. What's happening when we begin to work in this SharePoint 2010 was very new. Even the Excel sheets we are working, it was beta. So everything was very new. So to let them to give us all of this environment was not that easy. It took time. And that is actually, it was the biggest challenge for us. How to develop all of these things parallel. We are not blocked with SharePoint. No, we still can use our development area. We can do all of these things. We can test. We can make a prototype. Until when they give us the service, we begin to deploy our work.
Okay, the question was the amount of training we would have spent around the pivot tables. As I mentioned earlier, at this stage, the end users or principals are accessing the performance point or the SharePoint interface, but the regional offices are the ones who are likely to use the SharePoint, the Excel sheets and the Excel services. And a lot of the people in those areas are already familiar with using Excel, so the people employed in the regional offices are generally finance or sort of people who are familiar with Excel. So we have had, as I mentioned earlier, some of that connection with those 10 regional offices. But we've been fairly lucky because a lot of those guys have been using pivot tables in the past, and this actually they found actually quite straightforward and easy because they've been already working in Excel. So that's been good for us. The end users, I mean, I'll be lying if I said that they are using the Excel extensively at this stage. But hopefully, I mean, some of the ones that are pre-built, they're using those, but not the ones where you connect to the cube and you start to do stuff from the scratch. Okay, so the question was, how do we control the security level around access to the cube? I think as Refki mentioned earlier, one strategy has been to use perspectives, so only that sort of data goes out. The other one actually is funny, we were talking about this as to how we control that. It is through Active Directory within the SSAS environment. Do you want to add to that, Refki?
Yes, all the user inside the data, so all of them is Windows authenticated. Right, so all of them Windows authenticated. All what we are doing is in the database in SSAS, there is a rule, and you can, from this rule, you can just assign some roles or group for who doing what. But practically what's happening is the user is not beginning like what we did, beginning from scratch from the cube. Normally, he has a sheet, and he want to add a new measure, or normally he want to add more dimension, or he want to break down, or it change the user interface. So most of the interactions that he did, it was not up to he try to access a database with cube and doesn't. Do you know what I mean? The data connection, we have Excel service. This Excel service, yes, it was connected with SharePoint, but this one, no. You can download this one and you can use it straight away.
Yeah. So access to certain perspectives is advertised widely, and access to certain ones is not. And of course, that is then controlled through the SSAS environment with appropriate permissions. So in the 10 regions in those offices, we would know who are the people who would be working in it, or a group of people, and then we would manage that through that. Sorry? Not at this stage. So the question was, are we using Power Pivot? Not at this stage. Actually, that's the work we are doing with, obviously, teams from Microsoft and with Grant to sort of pick that up. Look, just in closing, I just wanted to mention and I wanted to thank the people who have supported us. So, of course, Raja from Microsoft has been critical in helping us not only with the presentations but with the work that we've been doing. And I wanted to mention Ron, who's been critical, and Shashank and Gavin Watson in the last couple of years at least as we've been working through SharePoint 2010 and the whole space. And, of course, our contact point, Andy Ray. And that has been critical in us coming to this point because we wouldn't have been able to do some of this stuff without these guys. Please complete your evals. I think that's going to help you guys win the mouse and me probably get another free trip back to Gold Coast. So thank you very much for coming and enjoy the rest of the ticket.